I'm going to do something a bit.
And get that OBS recording.
Congos.
Oh, Lay's, also known as Walkers.
Yes.
Lay's Wavy, or Lavy, Wavy.
Wavy crisps are far superior. Turn it up.
Do you know the song?
Nope.
All right, we'll just let it play through the first bit.
Cool.
Because it's epic.
What is this?
The Congos, come with me now. Here we go. You ready?
I like this.
It's good.
This is nice. Good music. This is pump it up music. I've listened to this in the morning.
I used to work in a restaurant with the chef, and he'd always play this to like get himself G'd.
I once did an interview, like a phone-in interview on some podcast or something, and I phone in, and I'm just listening to like something like this, like da 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 da, and I'm like, what's going on? And they're like, oh hey, this is we're gonna listen to this. we tend to like pump it up before we get going to bring the energy, and I'm like, this is gold.
I like this. Do you know what DHL's phone thing is?
No.
Waiting song. It is mountain high enough, no river low enough to stop us to get into you, babe.
It would drive me nuts.
Okay, here we go.
Let's make some show.
Make some show. Oh, I popped.
I think it's fine though. Did you peek red there?
A tiny bit.
Hang
on. Pop. No, I didn't. Pop.
Oh, you
pop.
You did blow it out. You see that little red mark?
You just blew out though. That was.
Did it turn red?
No. Pop.
Mine's blown out. Mine's blown out. Just don't adjust it. It's fine.
Okay.
You're all good. We're just fucking around.
From the diaphragm.
Let's make some show.
Make some show.
Hello, everybody. Did you not like that intro? I was talking to someone. They're like, can you bring a bit more energy to the beginning?
Yes, welcome. We can.
Well, we were just listening to some show that we can't, some song that we can't play because we don't want to, you know, violate copyright. But we listened to some pump it up music before we get started with this show. I am feeling pumped up. I'm excited. You're listening. You're not listening. You're part of the Simon Whistler Show with Sam Myers. Sam, what's new?
Well, I've been sat here with you for
very little because
hours.
We batch record these, so very little has changed in
little
mine and Sam's
since
life.
Since the last 2 minutes. That
I do feel that's a little bit of a shame because I feel like then we can't share like our life updates.
It is
over
a bit of
the
a
last
shame.
Few days.
I think it's a bit of a shame that so early in this series we have let people behind the curtain. Oh, rookie error!
Oh, my phone! Ah, I turned it off. I turned
so
it on in the break.
Glad that wasn't me.
Oh. I was like, I thought it was you. God damn it! This is what I do for
he
a living.
He went straight at pointing at me, going, "Sam, turn your phone off, man."
I was like, I don't make these kind of mistakes. I'm a professional. Shit!
Oh, karma!
God.
Oh, okay, nice. But no, I'm good. I'm good. I'm feeling very good. Actually, I've had 3 cups of tea. I'm buzzing. I won't be able to sleep tonight.
Yeah, this tea's got pretty strong. It's cut myself off like an hour or half an hour ago.
I feel it in my toes.
Yeah, it's not messing around. Guys, if you're enjoying this show so far, you're probably not because we haven't actually covered any, you know, content yet. But if you like this show in general, if you like what we do here at the podcast, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. If you're watching this on YouTube, subscribe. If you want to see the highlights of the show, subscribe. You're getting more tea, Sam. I can see you getting more tea. If you all of that stuff, just like, subscribe. It's all good.
Give us your comments. We want to know what you want to hear.
Yes. If you've got suggestions, if you've got stories, fun things that you'd like us to talk about,
great
hit
facts.
Up the comments.
Great facts.
Because right
we
now I have to look for them myself.
Exactly.
Which is...
And, you know, Jesus. We have a treasure trove of incredible stories in our listenership. So I feel that we should like... You know,
tap
make use
that
of that.
Resource.
Tap that resource.
Yeah. They call it in the biz UGC. User generated content.
Nice.
There's a whole business around this. I was talking with a company the other day that they have these vast, their whole model, this is a little bit off topic, but they have these big Facebook pages, which they monetize and they make money from like Facebook ads or whatever. Uh-huh. And the way, one of them is a big football page. And all of their videos and stuff are just videos that people submit just because they want to be on this huge Facebook page. And then this company, they're like, okay, we'll put it on our huge Facebook page. They stick some adverts on it and they make money off it.
Well, that's how you make money.
And I'm like,
money,
that's a whole lot smarter than how I do it, where I have to make my own stuff. I mean, Christ. Let's talk about making some of our own stuff. The first story today, man apologizes for making us all have stupid passwords. Have you heard of Bill Burr?
I don't know about Bill Burr.
Bill Burr, the comedian, stand-up comedian. Oh, my joke's not working because it's a different Bill Burr. Dude, you got Netflix. We talked about this in a previous show. Bill Burr's Paper Tiger is a very good show.
Bill Burr. I'm trying to think if I know
Bill
the
Burr,
guy.
Bald comedian. This dude.
I have
American.
No idea who Bill Burr is.
Bill Burr's good. And he's got a good podcast as well, which is really like, it's interesting because he's like very funny, like on like stand-up comedian, but his podcast is super chilled out and very good. So anyway, this Bill Burr is a different Bill Burr, and I'm like, it's not a super common name, but anyway, he's basically, I've gone about this all wrong. Long password passwords, right? I feel like since I had passwords, people were like, oh yeah, you know, you've got to have like a capital letter, use some punctuation, use big characters, small characters, numbers. Dude, some websites, I swear, I think Apple's one of these. They're like, yeah, you got to have a capital letter and you got to have like a number.
And a special character.
And it's got to be like
lowercase, uppercase.
Yeah. And it's like, and then you
can't be the same as it was.
No. And I'm like, I'm just going to be, every time I log into this, I'm going to be resetting my password, aren't I?
Yep.
And I use this password manager like Dashlane and stuff, who actually sponsor one of my other shows. And they do this kind of stuff, which makes it a lot easier.
Mm.
But it is a pain in the ass.
I literally, for my iTunes password, I reset my password every single time.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
Like with your phone, it's fairly easy to do. You sort of just go, I forgot my code, and then you can put your fingerprint on it.
Yeah.
And that's fine. However, if I have to do anything on my computer, I'm screwed.
Yeah, it's unbelievably painful. All of this is entirely unnecessary. So all of these complicated passwords, right? They're thanks to this dude called Bill Burr, who was basically a guy who worked for the government. He didn't even work in data security. He worked just for some random US government tech agency. And back in the day, he wrote this white paper for the government about password security. And he didn't really know what he was doing. So it was like, yeah, you got to have all these complicated things so like no one can crack your password. There is an amazing... Oh, please tell me I linked it. Open up the Gizmodo article. I'm pretty sure Gizmodo have a link to, or like a picture of the XCDC comic. If you just scroll down. So there's a great example. Like the title of this piece is like, sorry. And it's like $0R and then registered trademark R and then the symbol for the yen.
Yen. Yeah.
So scroll down. There it is. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So this explains this beautifully. And for people at home, I'm not going to read the comic and describe the whole comic to you, but just go look up XCDC passwords. Basically, it takes the whole thing and it explains why you don't need to have a crazy password with all of these numbers and letters in. Because essentially, the whole matter of it is computers can crack. It doesn't matter. They if you've got the password here, they give the example of like Troubadour 83, but it's all crazy, like with symbols and numbers and letters and all of this stuff. And it has 28 bits of entropy, which I should have looked up what entropy meant, but I thought it was like decay or whatever. But basically, this password is super easy for a computer to guess. They'll crack it 3 days at 1,000 guesses a second. Then, if you just have a long password called correct horse battery staple is the example they give, just four random common words together, just because it's so much longer, it has 44 bits of entropy, and it means it would take 550 years for the same computer doing 1,000 guesses a second to crack that password.
Bill Burr, I want to punch you in the face.
Well, so Bill Burr, there's a great quote here. He says, in the end, the list of guidelines was probably too complicated for a lot of folks to understand very well. And the truth is, it was barking up the wrong tree. So he's like, yeah, this was all completely unnecessary. And I'm really sorry.
But they still stand by their guns today and they tell you.
No, they've changed it.
Have they?
Yes.
No.
Well, I mean, the security recommendation of the government have now changed to being like, use a passphrase. So correct horse battery staple is not a password, it's a passphrase. Uh-huh. Or saying like, Simon and Sam make a podcast is a passphrase. It's super incredibly easy to remember and it's impossible for a computer to crack because it has so much entropy.
It's a lot of S's though. If it was a game of Hangman, that's it'd be true. Easy.
Yeah, dude, didn't we talk about in a previous episode, Jazz?
We did, yeah.
Hang, if you've not listened to our previous episode, Jazz, it's the hardest word to guess in Hangman, statistically. Anyway, the whole point of this is don't do it.
Don't do what?
Most websites these days don't force you to use all this crazy shit. Apple do because they're dicks. But most websites, they're just like, enter a password. It's got to be, you know, over 8 characters long. So you can use correct horse battery staple. Even these password managers, they'll be like, yeah, your password's a bit weak. And then you put like a dollar sign in and it's like powerful.
Boom, very strong. Wait,
is that even true? I don't think that's true.
No, I don't think it's true because ultimately it's just another symbol that you have to cycle through. So basically, the way I'd understand it is that these, like, as far as I understand, the hackers that like have systems running that are constantly trying to break passwords, they just bombard it. They bombard it with guesses.
There's
guesses
a couple of options. Guesses. They could do this, which is just a brute force attack, mm-hmm. which is where it's just try thousands of guesses. They can also do a dictionary attack where they'll just run through every word in the dictionary. Uh-huh. So this isn't actually basing it off a dictionary attack. So I guess, but even still, every single word in the English language in every single order.
With every single variation of every single of every single letter and symbol?
No, because then we're that's when we're talking about the previous start. If we're just doing passphrases, there are no variations. It's all like lowercase.
But what if you
alphabet.
What if with correct horse battery staple, you do then put zeros in as O's?
Yeah, but then we're getting into the pain in the ass territory again. anyway, use a passphrase. It's better if you can. Also, just use a password manager, guys. Like, really, get Dashlane. So that was the PSA. And humans are absolutely terrible at being random, right?
Mm.
It's a big problem, like lotteries and stuff. Even with the big machine, they're like, how do we make this truly random? Like everything has to be just so perfect and all of this stuff. And we're just terrible at it. So people say, and if you're like choosing words, you'll still be terrible at choosing words that are truly random.
Yeah.
So what they say is you get a big list of words, you go to a website, I think that Gizmodo article links to it, and it will give you like a random list of words. Then you get some dice and you roll the dice and you choose whichever, you know, you're like, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you pick that one and you're like, okay, that's word number one, roll it again, that's word number two, and you get your four words for your passphrase. And that's like a way to get something that's, well, it's never going to be truly random, because even then maybe the dice is a little bit biased, maybe the random generator that has picked those words, it's going to be really hard for that to be like algorithmically unbiased. I think, not an expert, but I think, because computers suck at randomness as well. Everyone sucks at randomness.
It's just, I don't think randomness is really a thing. I think it's not even a real concept.
I think it is, but, and I'm getting really out of my depth here, but isn't there something in quantum physics? Because Newton believed that everything would, if you had enough information, everything was predictable. And then quantum physics came along and was like, actually, it's not quite true.
Mm.
But I'm well out of my depth now.
Tell us more, Simon.
Yeah, no. Let's just move on before people in the comments are like, Simon's dumb. let's move on to our next story. I'd never heard of this, and I'm not sure how, because it sounds like something I would absolutely make a video about. The unknown person.
Ooh.
This is, open up the thing there from the National Post. Never heard of it.
That's the wrong one.
Yeah. I think it's Canadian. So this dude, he's French, maybe. He speaks French. Okay. I think we actually found out later he's possibly from Cameroon. We don't really know.
Possibly French-Canadian.
But the point is, he's been in prison since 2013. He's been in prison for 6 years because he's refused to identify himself.
Is that a imprisonable offense?
Well, the problem is he was arrested for running some sort of scam.
Oh, okay. Well.
But even now, he's been in prison for 6 years, which the article points out is like the term that you'd spend in there for manslaughter. So he's just not identifying himself. Anytime he goes to any of these hearings, like where they're like, you need to identify yourself so we can prosecute you and all of this stuff, he just tells them to go to hell.
That's just not like a good way to go forward. You know, like that's not productive.
Just doesn't cooperate.
Huh.
And they've desperately tried to identify this man and get all this information on him. And so basically his story is he arrives in Canada. I think it was early. Early 2000s, sorry.
Drink some more tea.
Long day, yeah. Early 2013. And he comes in on a 10-day tourist visa, on a passport, a French passport. And then he gets arrested about 6 months in doing a scam called the black... It was his black money scam.
Ooh.
So this is quite interesting. How it works is there would be this money that was brought into the country, like illegally somehow, and it had been spoiled. So it had been dyed black. And they had all of this money. This was the scam. And they'd find a mark and they'd be like, hey, we need to buy, like, we've got all this money that's been ruined, but there's this expensive chemical we can buy that will remove the black from the money, and then we can use it. And so they show him, and, you know, they get this black note, and they wash it off with this special chemical, which is probably just water or whatever, just washing away the black ink. And then they're like, yeah, we need to buy more of this chemical, but we can't afford it. What we'll do is we'll split the money with you that we get from washing all this money. And there's this big pile of black money, except that there's only a few that are actually money and the rest are just covered in black. There's no magical chemical. So they get the mark to be like, okay, yeah, we'll do this together. We'll wash it all off. And then the guy who, you know, gave the con man the money for the chemical, and he's run off. So this guy gets arrested running the scam, which is kind of a clever scam, if a bit simple. And yeah, so... that's how he got into prison. Never identified himself. Like I say, he was telling all these guys in the Canadian justice system to just go to hell whenever he was identified. Interpol get on this, right? So Interpol are like, let's get on the case. We'll figure this all out. It turns out that the passport that he came in on, so they thought he was French all the time, and he spoke French. Mm-hmm. It's Canada, so I guess they do as well.
Yeah.
And it turns out it's a fake passport, so that's not a great start. Interpol finally get hit on his fingerprints. But then, and they think, okay, we've got it locked down. It's this dude. But then the problem is they look deeper into it, and it's like the fingerprints match multiple people. So they don't really know, like, which one of these people he actually is, if any. Because he's been no help. He's not like, oh, yeah, you know, you got all of my false identities, or is this my real identity? No one really knows. It does seem like the people come from Cameroon, so that's what they think. They think he's from Cameroon. They also realized, oh, he was in prison in the UK for some time. But the whole time, he was just in prison under a false identity.
False identity, yeah.
So they're like, we still don't know who he is. The mystery continues.
I just think there must be a happier way to go through life.
Well, you've been in prison for 6 years. What have you done that is as bad?
Well, I love this. This is a quote of what he was saying about going to hell. So... I don't care what you do, you can go to hell, the man said as she spoke. That's all I have to say to you. Go to hell.
Every time.
He stood and started for the door. The hearing is not over, she called out. I don't care, go to hell. He called out. It's just not helping. Like,
he just doesn't want to cooperate.
But like, does he not want to go back to real life? Does he not want to experience what life has to offer?
I don't know. It's kind of weird, right?
Does he not want to play babyfoot? Does he not want to go out and, I don't know.
Do what people from Cameroon, maybe.
Possibly, maybe he could be from Haiti. He could
knows?
Be. Who knows?
He could be from anywhere. However, this is a very recent news article. He's recently hired a lawyer.
Ooh.
So who knows why? Maybe he's going to sort it out. Maybe he's like 6 years in prison was a bit much. But then now he's going to still have to go. Although I guess maybe because time served or whatever. Maybe.
Yeah. Are you? But, are you, sir? Are you, Mr. Joe Bloggs?
Yeah.
Go to hell.
Maybe it's just my lawyer is just speaking through my lawyer. What does the lawyer say? I've been told to read this on behalf of my client. Go to hell. So yeah, they Interpol doesn't know. The UK government doesn't know.
No
Canada doesn't know. No one knows.
No one knows.
Maybe this we'll find out as this story develops.
I hope that we do find out one
Maybe
day.
Maybe we can follow up.
There we go.
Yeah. You want to do another story? Do you want to do a story?
I can do a story.
Let my voice recover. I was just cracking right there.
Your
so
voice recover. Okay.
Long day. I also recorded a bunch of videos today.
You're going to end up like, what was his name? David Attenborough.
As we see.
I think David Attenborough is just old.
I think he's old and he's got a voice like this.
He's very croaky, but he's very sort of, what's the word? Hypnotic to listen to.
Yeah, it's very nice to listen to.
And as we move on to the next story.
What is the next story?
Right, so I would like to talk about underwater rivers. Ooh. Have you ever seen a picture of an underwater river?
No.
All right, so basically what it is when heavy salt water forms normal rivers underneath lighter, fresh or less salty water. Mm-hmm. So there's a point in the water called the thermocline, I believe it is, if I remember correctly, back to my diving days. And basically, it's where two salinities of water split. So you have heavy water below and lighter water above, and you can get a real, it can be split because of salinity, it can be split because of temperature. So when you swim through the thermocline, you might notice this if you're in the sea or in a lake or something like that, your feet might be significantly colder than your
definitely
body.
The sun like heats the top or whatever,
exactly or it'll be like a different sort of passage of water coming in, and there'll and so like when you're diving you can really feel this. It's why often you need heavier wetsuits if you're going for a deep dive. Say you're going down to 30 meters, you'll go through the thermocline and you'll spend time in significantly colder water, maybe 3-4 degrees, which in water terms is a lot, and then you come back up and you feel like you're in tropical temperatures even if it's not. So basically, all right, hang on, if we zoom in here, let's all right, so this is in Yucatan, Mexico, which is a diving paradise, by the way. So they've got all the caves there and all that, and basically we've got a little diagram of how this forms.
Okay,
so you can see we've got fresh water, it is fresh water in this case, and then there's salt water which is fed in underneath the fresh water. It's heavier in salinity, so it drops.
It's near the sea then,
I believe.
And where's the salt water coming from?
Oh, hang on, here we go, we've got to go to the notes. From land, Angelita looks like any other ordinary swimming hole. It's not until you dive almost 100 feet to the underwater river that becomes
it's pretty deep, right?
That is quite deep. 100 feet is what, 30 meters?
No, I was thinking about 100 meters.
No, 100 meters. 100 meters is really deep. No, here you go. It's groundwater, salty groundwater. So the underwater river is formed when the fresh topwater meets the exposed salty groundwater.
Yeah.
So it's 30 meters deep. And basically, due to the salinity, the water is heavier, so it stays below it.
Makes sense.
And it looks exactly like a river.
What?
Yeah.
This is...
like
this is so much better than I expected.
Hang on. Here we go. Yeah, don't worry. I don't bring crap to this podcast.
That's incredible.
This is only quality. Hang on.
Sorry, I got to describe that. So we are looking at... it's as if you're looking... And it's not like a random column of water that you can't see. It's like it looks as if we are looking at a normal river running through a jungle, except there is a person scuba diving in the air above the river.
This is it.
Have you seen something like this?
I have seen the thermocline. So you can see the thermocline normally when you're diving somewhere. And it does look, depending on the salinity of the water, it does look something like that. You can't really see under it. However, that is really special because that's in a channel. And so it's isolated. And basically, similar to a normal river, you can't see through it. Like, and that's what's really interesting about this. You can see there's plants growing out of it and on the banks, so it looks like a normal riverbank, which is...
And there's trees and... No, I mean like branches
no,
and
trees.
Stuff.
They are trees. Trees and leaves. You can see there's like, not coral, but it's
they're just like underwater
vegetation.
Trees.
Yeah, exactly.
Whoa.
Look at this. This is fantastic. All right, here we go. Let me zoom in on a picture. There is a man sat with a fishing rod.
So he's pretending to fish underwater on a...
Exactly, into the river.
That's incredible.
Isn't that amazing?
Like, this is one of the coolest things that I've ever seen that I've never seen before.
There you go. I'm glad because that I saw this and I was like, I've never seen that before.
Zoom in that one on the right.
This one.
That one, yeah.
That's as far.
It looks like he's swimming in the...
Exactly. So the guy, there's a diver in the water and he's sat his whole body up to his shoulders below the thermocline, so into the river, as with inverted commas, and his head is stuck out and you cannot see his body.
This is rad.
He's in the water despite being 30 meters underwater. Isn't that mind-blowing?
Yes.
I'm glad. It made me so happy that you like that.
Yes.
I wasn't sure if you'd enjoy this, but this is...
absolutely do. This is my favorite story of the day.
Look at that one. This one's perfectly clear. Look at that. Oh, God.
It's what we're looking at. If you are enjoying this podcast in its audio format, do yourself a favor and pick up the highlights of this one. It'll be on Simon Whistler Show Highlights on YouTube. I don't know. How do underwater rivers work?
I imagine so.
And, amazing.
I mean, Yucatan is pretty much the center of incredible diving for this sort of thing. Like they always say, like there's Belize has the big blue hole, the deep blue hole.
Oh yeah.
But there's nothing in the deep blue hole is the problem. Yeah. It's just a lot of dead people at the bottom.
Oh.
Sadly, it's the home of a lot of injuries and people like free divers that go down too deep because it just goes down and
how
down
deep
and down
is it?
And down.
It's radically deep. Right?
It's very deep. I wouldn't be able to give you a number, but it's deep enough for all. So. around 40 meters, all light begins to disappear. You don't get any light under 40, 50 meters. And then it gets, I think it's 170 meters deep. I want to say something like that. I
what
might
happens
be
then?
Completely wrong. Well, narcosis sets in. So people that, basically sports divers, like, so not recreational divers, sports divers, people that do the mix of gases and things like that, they can typically dive down to, not typically, it's quite an extensive training period. That's when diving becomes an extreme sport. They can go down to like 120 meters, which is, that's radically deep. That's really deep. And they have to set up multiple levels where they'll sit with
I've heard about
tanks
this. Yeah,
and so they basically just have to sit and decompress on pure oxygen to pump out as much nitrogen as they can so that they don't get the bends when they come up, because you fully, like, you fill your blood with nitrogen, and if you come up too quickly it'll turn into the bends and terrible pain, you die. But Yucatan has the underwater caves, the hundreds of miles of caves, and then they've got these rivers.
The Great Beer Hall is 124 meters or 407 feet deep.
I wasn't too far
no,
off.
No, pretty good.
Yeah, there you go.
Should we do another story? Yeah. Or is there more to add on this,
there's no
this
more
incredible
to add. Just
story?
Go and dive this. This looks incredible. I'm desperate to go here now and visit this spot.
I want to talk about Koreans.
Ooh.
Koreans used to eat a lot.
Still do, don't they?
No. I mean, not like they used to. And this is weird, right? Because when I think of the past, as always, like, people were hungrier. You know, unless you were rich back in the day, you were hungry. I mean, if you were poor, you were hungry. Like, you think of, like, London in the Victorian times, like Charles Dickens and all that stuff. Like, hunger was a real thing, and all the rich people were fat. In the past, did you bring up... Oh, yeah, okay. Is this the link? Yeah, cool.
This is the link.
Koreans absolutely feasted, like, especially compared to at the time and with the other compared to the other Asian countries. I don't know what date is. I must have, like, not put it in there and I don't remember it, but it was, like, it was until relatively recently. Yeah, but started in like 1592 when people first started, you know, outsiders started going to Korea and stuff and looking at all of this stuff. They were like, whoa, they eat a lot. Anyway, this Atlas Explorer article and Atlas Obscura is an amazing, is it Obscura or Explorer?
That is Atlas Obscura.
I always, whenever I want to bring up this website, I always Google search Atlas Explorer and then it doesn't come up and I'm like, oh yeah, Obscura. It's an incredible website. If you do any traveling and stuff or you go somewhere, Atlas Explorer, god damn it, Atlas Obscura has like all of these great, like, off the beaten path things.
Oh, wow, okay. I've never heard of it before. I'll have to give it a look.
You would like this. Anyway, the article that they wrote about this starts off with this great anecdote about, so the Koreans and the Japanese are at war, and the Korean spies are like, well, the Japanese, they're going to be here for a month. They don't have much food. You know, there's not, they're really, you know, there's not enough. Turns out that basically the Japanese just ate way less than they did. The Koreans were like absolutely feasting, and they thought that the Japanese rice bowls were sauce bowls. So they thought the Japanese were there for a month, and it's like, no, they were there for the long haul.
Oh wow.
And yeah, the Koreans suffered because of that.
But what did they eat? They ate rice or?
Yeah, wait, which, the Koreans or the
Koreans?
It's super interesting. The rice is what they ate, and there's a super good reason for it. I will just share a quote from a European who visited Korea first, and then I'll tell you why. When I was in Japan, the Japanese told me their neighbors ate about three times as they did. When I later arrived at the port of today's Incheon, I can't pronounce the old one, I saw that it truly was the case. Unlike the Chinese and the Japanese, who eat at regular intervals, Koreans eat at all times. Unbelievable amounts of rice, along with a fistful of red peppers, that would disappear in an instant. Scroll down in the article. Or it depends how far down.
Where are
we
going?
This dude. That is one man's meal.
Wow. It's a lot of rice, but...
It's a giant bowl. He's got a giant bowl of rice in front of him, a giant bowl of, like, soupy sauce, and then 6 other bowls of little sides.
That is absolutely a dream. That's like my dream.
Also, that hat.
That hat. It's a couple of sizes too small.
Just a couple. But you're saying this is your dream? I'm so hungry right now, dude. It's like 8:30 and I haven't eaten since lunch.
No, me neither. I didn't even have a big lunch.
I had liquid food.
Oh,
what did you have?
What did I have?
Doesn't matter.
No idea. No, that's a relevant pod. But no, it's like, this is my kind of dream. I love this.
Oh, yeah.
Because I always over rice. When I cook rice, deliberately, I over rice.
Yeah.
Like, so
I like having an excess of rice.
Yeah. I mean,
rice is great.
I don't feel bad eating rice. As in, like, I don't feel bad about my soul.
It's not great for you.
It might not be.
It's not so carbohydrates.
But I love it. But also, it's cheap. Like, you can get a ton of...
Cheap, good rice. Basmati rice. I spring for the basmati over the long grain.
Ooh.
Worth it. I'm fancy.
Yes, no, but like, I find that things like rice, you can buy by the 5 kilo or something like that, and that'll last you months. And so maybe that was the same case with them. They just had a lot of rice, and so why not eat it rather than go bad? Does rice go bad? Must do, mustn't it?
I guess eventually, if you keep it dry enough. Anyway, another dude who visited wrote, when it comes to serving fruits, for example, large peaches, even a person with the most restraint eats around 10. It's not uncommon to see a person eating 30, 45, 50 peaches.
Wow.
As to melons, the small Korean melons, or chamo, people usually eat around 10 at a time, but sometimes they eat 20 to 30. They say they're large peaches, but large peaches back in the day. So let's assume they're like regular-sized peaches today, or even smaller. Who the hell eats 50 peaches?
Well, like, there's just nah. Like, there's no way that, number one, they weren't fat. Like,
no, I mean, these dudes aren't fat.
Like, Koreans are not big people. Like, no. they're like, as a general people, they're not big. Like, and if you eat anything in excess, you should get fat.
Yeah. So I promised I'll tell you why.
Why?
Or why they're not fat, but why they eat so much and why they eat so much rice particularly. Turns out, basically, a couple of things. Lots of fertile land. They were also really good at farming.
Uh-huh.
So, but, big important one. Back in the day, rice at some point was basically, I think, if I'm misremembering it, but they have a barter economy.
Mm.
And then they were like, let's just standardize it all. So rice is just what we use to trade.
Okay.
And so people were like, well, I'm just going to grow tons of rice because it's as good as money. So they just started growing all this rice. They need to eat all this rice. They had lots of fertile land. They were really good at farming. They needed to eat stuff with the rice. So they started making more and they started eating it all. And life was awesome.
Makes perfect sense.
And now they eat way less. Like, which culture now eats way less than they used to?
But Koreans are really big on barbecue, aren't they? They do Korean barbecues.
There's a couple of good Korean barbecues. Have you been to the place up by Namisti Miru?
No,
that's a great Korean barbecue place. Yeah, it's the first. I had Wagyu beef there the other day. You know, that super fancy. Yeah,
Wagyu. Dude, massaged beef.
I'd never had it before. No. Wait, is that the massaged one? It's like really fatty.
That's Kobe beef, isn't it? But Wagyu.
That's Kobe.
No, well, Wagyu beef. Wagyu beef just means actually Japanese beef.
Oh.
But
it's like super fatty and all.
Exactly,
of this.
It's really fatty. They normally fed a corn-fed diet.
Are they?
And
it was good.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. And
melts
there's like
mouth.
The barbecue and you barbecue it up. And then there's another one near Ipe Pavlova, which is also pretty good.
Oh, wow.
Dude, you got to go. These places are solid. We'll go sometime.
Very good. Sounds good.
Okay. Dude, I'm so hungry. I'm so hungry. I'm
hungry.
Some,
talking about food.
Let's order some Uber Eats.
I can't decide what I want.
Well, now I know I want Korean. Yeah, so nowadays they basically eat less because they're more sedentary, like everyone else.
They have a lovely sort of food culture in Asia, like China and Korea, that I really love, in Japan as well, where they do the big soups, where they kind of use everything. You throw in a bit of tofu, you throw in a bit of fish, a bit of octopus, a bit of this, a bit of blood, all that sort of stuff, and they use everything, and they're absolutely delicious.
The Chinese do this as well. There's like a hot pot, is what
that sort of
it,
thing.
Right?
Yeah, hot pot. Yeah,
pretty cool.
I was very, very lucky. I got to sit with some local people and eat one once, and it was. Really cool experience. And I, you know, when you get something the first time and you kind of engorge, is that the word?
Gorge.
Engorge on it and you just eat too much.
Yeah. Well, we talked about that in a previous episode about people's stomachs exploding.
Mm-hmm.
I engorge myself. Maybe
me.
I'm a binge eater.
You know, I'm curious about competitive eaters.
It's a good question, isn't it?
Because there was,
did their stomachs explode?
Like, this is it. You see, I watched a really interesting video. There's a YouTuber that I really enjoy watching his stuff called Abroad in Japan. And
I listened to his podcast. You?
Oh, very good. Yes, I think I recommended it.
Is the podcast called
you.
The same thing?
Yep.
Yeah, you recommended it to me.
And he's got a really great YouTube channel as well. Go check him out. But he was filming something in a little izakaya, a little sort of restaurant, and there was this tiny little woman who is a competitive eater.
Yeah.
And he struggled with this monster ramen, massive monster ramen that had all noodles and everything and meat all piled up. It was like maybe sort of 30 centimeters high.
Good Lord.
She had something seven times the size, and she was about half his size. He didn't finish his one, and she completely demolished that one.
She's a competitive eater.
Competitive eater, but she is miniature. Like, think little tiny Japanese lady.
Yeah, because I feel, isn't competitive eating just about, like, really fast and lots of stuff? But then I don't feel like you necessarily eat, doesn't mean you eat, like, a massive amount of food anyway. Like, there was that, Kobayashi or whatever his name was, the famous guy who did the Coney Island hot dog thing and then won, and he was like a tiny Japanese man.
Very, very likely. Yeah.
Something like that. Crazy.
Crazy.
Oh, we should follow up on that. I'd be interested. Or if anyone knows, comment.
Well, maybe
because sort of
maybe that's the case. Maybe that's the case with these Koreans, that they were just pushing so much in so quickly. It was like a competitive eating.
I don't know. Yeah, at some point you get fat. I think they just led busy lifestyles. They were all there to grow all this stuff they had to eat.
I suppose, yeah.
It's not like today where you just go to the supermarket. Yeah. Do you want to do another story today?
Yeah, I can.
I got one more, but if you want to go before me, or
I think I do. I've got a couple. Let's see what I've got in the what do they call it, in the canon.
Wait, jungle or rainforest?
Jungle or rainforest?
I want to do that. Are you cool doing that?
Yeah, I'm cool.
I don't
doing
know
that.
What the difference is.
Well, it's so okay. So jungle. All right, that's the question. What is the difference between jungle? If you haven't read my notes,
I haven't.
What is, in your opinion, the difference between jungle and rainforest? And it's maybe not as
rain?
Far from you from like it maybe not as far as you think it is.
Okay,
from one another.
I would say probably just geography. No, types of trees.
Ooh.
Is it types of trees?
Clever idea.
I want to say if it's like, but there's also forest, right?
Mm.
Okay, I want to say forest is where it's, but then you can have like an evergreen forest. I feel maybe something to do with deciduous and evergreen. Okay.
No.
Yeah,
no.
Tell me. I don't know. This is a podcast where we inform people about
exactly,
things we don't know.
Exactly. So,
I read your notes.
The answer is the difference between jungle and rainforest is that jungle is the densest part of the rainforest. Mm. So there's
really?
It's the part that contains all the life. So the word jungle comes from the Sanskrit jangala, meaning uncultivated land. Only 6% of the earth is jungle, but more than half of all species on the earth live in that jungle.
Whoa.
Yes. And the most diverse habitat on the earth is the jungle canopy, formed by a belt of interconnected treetops 130 feet above the ground, so roughly 50 meters above the ground. The animals that live there never need to leave. They get their water from epiphytes, plants that grow on other plants and trap water in their fronds. Some parts of the canopy are so dense that it will take rainwater 10 minutes to reach the ground as it pitter-patters down.
It's incredible.
It is estimated that...
Dude, you're bringing some gold to today's episode.
You're welcome. It is estimated that 90% of all jungle animals and plants live among the leaves in the canopy. So they never touch the ground. Like they
live in the sky.
Live in the sky. So birds, animals, like monkeys and all that sort of thing. But also the ants and all those sorts of things, they just never touch the ground. So this is an interesting fact. All right. Figs are a keystone species
like
in the
figs.
Jungle. All right.
Didn't even know figs grew in a jungle.
Take a quick guess. How many types of variety of fig do you think exist?
700.
Oh, you're close. 800.
Wow, that was a wild ass guess.
Was that a guess?
Yeah, totally.
Wow, fantastic. So there are more than 800.
Unlike you, the other episode with the bloody jury duty. So how much does a jury duty? Well, Simon, I read the notes. 64 pounds.
Well, I'm literally controlling the
Come
notes.
Come on, Sam, play along.
Controlling the notes.
That's true. You are the note master.
But no. So there's 800 varieties of jungle fig, and the fruit that they produce all year round makes the forest's foremost cafeteria. How do they get fertilized? All right, this is genius. So at the bottom of the fig is a tiny hole called the osteole that allows only in a special fig wasp. So one type of wasp that fits inside of this osteole.
Dude.
They lay their eggs inside these. These then hatch.
It's kind of scary.
Yeah, I know, right?
You're just biting into a fig and there's a big ass wasp in there. Jungle wasp.
What? You don't want a jungle wasp.
Jungle wasp just feels worse than normal wasp.
It does, doesn't it? Like, everything in the jungle is scarier.
I mean, wasp is already like 99 level shitty. And then you got jungle wasp. It's like, oh shit.
It's like Jumanji. Well, what a movie. But,
great movie. Did you watch the remake?
I did watch the remake.
Let's not go there. Tell me more. God.
No, we're coming to the end. So they
I
lay,
like this.
They lay their eggs inside of these wasp plants. The eggs hatch. So they're not inside the wasp. They're inside the wasp
they were
plant.
Inside the fig, right?
Inside the not inside the wasp. Inside the fig. They're not actually inside the fig, but inside the No, I'm lying. Inside a tiny hole at the bottom of the fig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where the wasp goes.
Sorry. Yeah, they go there. They lay their eggs. These then hatch, and the new wasps go off to pollinate the other figs because they're born in the environment where the pollen already is. So they go off, they fly into a female fig and pollinate it, and then boom, bada boom, bada bing, spreads it. They drop their seeds, and pollination occurs.
That's
further.
Kind of horrible.
Yeah.
But,
and yeah. I mean, there's...
And the wasps get like a nice little place to grow.
Well, yeah, nice little environment, nice little perfect environment inside of a fig.
Isn't nature horrific?
Isn't nature terrible?
Anyway, jungle versus rainforest. I really feel, in my mind, rainforest was like more extreme jungle, but it turns out jungle is more extreme rainforest.
Yes, so jungle is just the center of the rainforest. There's only 6% of jungle in the whole world. And
there you go.
It's that bit that we've got to protect.
It's also a type of music.
Jungle.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I don't like it, but it exists.
Very good.
I want to do another story. Let me do the last one today.
Okay.
You got another one. We can do that next time.
No worries.
The royal family and rationing.
Ooh.
This is also a short one, so it's nice and easy. Bring up that history.com link. I first wanted to mention, because this article on history.com it talks about the royal family and rationing, but there's really not a ton to say. So, or was this no, this was I feel like I clicked on this link and it was going to be about the royal family and rationing, but it turned out to be about Queen Elizabeth's wedding dress.
Uh-huh.
But I was really interested in rationing, so this was just my jumping off point. First of all, though, this article talks about the expensive royal weddings. You know, William and Kate's wedding. Hey, you've read it already, haven't you? Do you know what it is? How much they?
Something happened, and it says start recording.
When did that happen?
I don't know.
Just hit start recording.
Yeah, is that the whole thing?
I really hope not. You hit it at the beginning, right?
I'm pretty sure I hit it at the beginning. You told me to, didn't you?
I did.
Then I would have hit it.
Well, we'll see. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Oh God, I have no idea when that happened.
It's all right.
Should we go back to the beginning of this section? Or?
Nah, fuck it. We'll just continue.
I've got no idea how much this...
Don't worry about it. There's nothing we can do now.
Is that just the screen? Or is that everything?
Just the screen.
Woo!
Yeah, we could... if it hasn't recorded the screen, we can put up some pictures on the... I'll have our editor put some stuff up.
Sorry for swearing.
Crossed.
I panicked.
Dude, I swear all the time. I think we should bleep them out, though.
Maybe.
Because we like money.
Bleep. Okay.
How much did William and Kate spend on flowers at their wedding?
A lot. I don't know. I think they're quite conscious of their money because they spend their own money.
Well, they're not. Oh, you think taxpayer would pay for it?
No, the taxpayer wouldn't pay for it. They're quite conscious
of not paying.
But
they're super rich.
They're super rich. So let's say they spent 500. No, I think a million.
A million. Absolutely bang on.
Is it?
Yep. Let's talk about the Queen's wedding in 1947. So taking it back, 60 years. So rationing, and this is what this whole history.com article was about, rationing was in effect, and the royal family were not exempt from rations. So I'm sure you're familiar with this, but maybe our international listeners are not. During World War II, like certain things were rationed, like clothes and some food and all of this stuff, because there wasn't enough of it and they wanted people to consume less. So basically, her wedding dress was paid for with like ration coupons, and they had to be really careful with it and all of this stuff. And so she didn't have some like giant train of cloth behind her, like Lady Di and all of this stuff. And all of this stuff was brought in from around the world. Obviously, it was after the war ended, but rationing was in 1947. This was, but obviously, rationing continued for some time afterwards because there still wasn't enough food.
Yeah.
Anyway, I wanted to talk about rations. Can you go back to the document?
Yes.
And there's another one there from historicuk.com.
Because
I feel like, I don't know, my nan was alive, she was young, she must have been quite young, during the Second World War, but she had like ration books and stuff, and my nan kept everything.
Okay,
keeps everything.
Wow, that's
so
interesting.
She had like her old ration books and stuff, which I remember seeing as a kid. And I was like, okay, zoom in on that. At the top there.
What, this here?
Yeah, it's all in ounces, which is a bit confusing, but yeah. I've got a vague idea of what ounce. What's an ounce in... In grams. I think an ounce is like, isn't it 12 grams?
Could be. I don't know. I always grew up using ounces.
28 grams.
I grew up using ounces because my mom used ounces.
I got it. It's 28 grams. So in a typical week, what we're looking at is like the ration thing. And I remember my nan showing me this, and it did look like this, and you'd get your stamps or whatever to collect this. So in a week, for one person, you'd have like 4 ounces of bacon and ham. So what is that? Like 100 grams.
Mm.
And
That's
then
not a lot.
No, like 2 chops of meat, 60 grams of butter, 2 ounces of butter, 2 ounces of cheese, 4 ounces of marge, 4 ounces of cooking fat, 3 pints of milk, which feels a bit excessive. Like, that's what I mean. I don't think I go through 3 pints of milk a week. 8 ounces of sugar, and then 1 pound of preserves. What's a pound? Like, Phil, it's half a kilo, maybe?
Yeah.
Just totally guessing.
I really don't know, taking a rough guess.
To be honest. Every 2 months. And then some tea, and you get one fresh egg every week. And then 12 ounces of sweets every 4 weeks.
I don't feel there's any actual substantial food in this list of food.
No. And I remember thinking this, and I'm like, okay, well, that's not a lot of
food. How do you make anything? It's all just fat. It's like, it's cooking
fats. Okay, you know why? Fruit and vegetables was never rationed.
Ah!
Right? And I'm like, what? So it wasn't, you could have as much fruit and vegetables as you wanted, as long as you had money for it?
Hence the carrot cake.
Is that what caused the carrot
cake? Well, that's why there was carrot cake, because they didn't have enough sugar to make and like flour and stuff like that.
I quite like carrot cake.
I love carrots. It's my favorite cake.
Whoa. Whoa.
No. It's my favorite cake.
Cheesecake?
I will wrestle you to the death.
Wow.
Like, it's my carrot cake with a good frosting is...
Wow.
But like an English carrot cake.
I wasn't imagining another type of carrot cake.
No, because like different countries, they make carrot cake, but it's not carrot cake.
It's not quite the same.
Not the stuff.
Oh, yeah, I thought this wasn't enough. But then I found out like fruits and vegetables were not part of rationing. And I was like, dude, I'd be totally fine.
Well, everyone,
I mean, I love meat.
Everyone had allotments, didn't they? So they basically just made, they did their own, like they had their own little plot of garden where they could plant their own food.
Right. Not everyone. Like people had little farms and stuff, but not everyone. I remember my nan had a farm and she was like, yeah, we got to have chickens and we'd kill the chickens and stuff and eat them and all of this stuff. But yeah, I thought that was super interesting. I had no idea about rationing, really.
That is really interesting. I think that whole period, that whole post-war period, is just a really interesting period of time where things were beginning to sort of stitch themselves back together, but it wasn't quite together yet, you know? And like I remember, my grandma telling me about waiting to get bananas or something like that, that they get one banana.
Wow.
And they had to stop the whole banana trade because of the war. And then like they would ration them afterwards and there was like one banana. I think it was bananas. But yeah, because my gran grew up in London, and
was she evacuated?
She was not evacuated. She wasn't. I think she was born 3 years after the war or something.
Okay.
So that whole sort until she was 10, she was walking around like back then. It was really kind of chill. Like kids just walked around on the streets, and she said she used to like pogo stick around all the old sort of blown up buildings and things like that. You really kind of knew that there had been a war. Like it was really obvious and.
My nan's 90, so she was born 1933. So she was a kid during the war.
Yeah. Mine's about 15 years younger.
Okay.
I don't want to say the actual number because I'm not sure.
Yeah, my nan might be like 91 or 92, maybe 89. I don't know. She's around. I'm as old as my teeth and a little bit... I'm as old as my tongue and a little bit younger than my teeth. That's what she always used to say when, as a kid, you'd be like, how old are you, Nan? You're so old. Ah! Before you gained tact. That's it today. This has been Simon Whistler's show. Sam, it's a pleasure to have you on here always. You brought some great stories today. That river one, solid. Absolutely.
I'm so glad. Have I inspired you to go to Yucatan and dive there?
No, you've inspired me to do better with my stories.
You're welcome. All right. I'm glad you enjoyed that, Simon. Thank you very much.
Hopefully our video screen recording has worked out. If not... It is what it is.
It is what it is.
People we'll post just have pictures. To look at our faces.
Well, that's it. We'll post pictures because that might even actually be better for that particular segment. We'll just post up pictures of it.
So good. Thank you, everybody, for listening. It's and or watching. Review the podcast if you're listening to it. Leave us a comment if you're watching it. Say hi to me on Twitter at Simon Whistler. Sam, where are you at?
At this is Sam Myers. MEYERS.
Very good. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back real soon.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Done.
Done.
Woo!
Woo! I don't know what happened with that screen. I think maybe what happened was that I might have pulled over onto this screen and pressed enter on something. And maybe it... But I don't know. Whatever.
Well... Hopefully, I really don't know.
Bruno will figure it out.